So Glenn, tell us how Snap Judgment came to be.
Snap Judgment has a crazy origin story. I was listening to a podcast, and I was listening to it, and I was just thinking, you know, for the same reason that a lot of people contribute to their local public radio station, I know I did, and the reason why I did so was largely to preserve my right to complain. Like, this is my public radio station, and I thought, well, I can't get mad at these shows if I don't even put my name in the hat. So I did. I made my little 2-minute recording. My daughter came. She came downstairs. She was like 2 or 3 years old. And I told her a very inappropriate story. I recorded it on my desktop computer. And I sent it away the next day. It was the last day of the contest. And I forgot about it. About 3 months later, I got a phone call saying, you know, I was one of 10 finalists nationwide. But I knew better, and I thought it was my buddy Mark playing a joke on me. So I'm like, yeah, right, and I hung up the phone. And they called back and said, no, we're serious. What's going on? Do you want to do this or not? And from then on, I've been trying to make Snap work.
What were you doing prior to Snap Judgment? Were you working radio or media? What were you up to?
I have a public policy background. I have a legal background. I was running a nonprofit. I was running a center for young entrepreneurs at Berkeley. But my background is mostly in nonprofit, nonprofit development, nonprofit management. I've run an organization called the Council for Responsible Public Investment. I've done a lot of nonprofit work in Asia and social services stuff. I was just about as far away from media as you can go.
There had to be some surprises. Your learning curve had to be pretty steep.
Yeah. No, it was very, very, the whole idea of starting a show from scratch, which is really kind of what we did. The show, you know, the first recordings of the show were done at my kitchen table. And sometimes my partner, Mark, we record in his bedroom. And if the UPS truck went by, we had to stop recording for a little bit. You know, he lived across the street from the UPS station. We were doing it in closets. It was, you know, this was really, really kind of a low-tech operation. But I think the thing that I learned more than anything was to reach out, and that the community is everything. Because Snap just simply would not have happened if it wasn't for a lot of people giving us their genius early on and putting enormous amounts of hard work and effort into it. And give you just one example of that. You know, our deadline to bring Snap Judgment to The Wire, which is, you know, putting it on the, which was within the NPR stream. Our deadline, I believe, was 6 a.m. Pacific time.
You produce the show, you create the show in Oakland, California. Go ahead.
Right, right. So that was 6 a.m. Thursday was our absolute deadline. And we generally were making that by 30 or 40 seconds.
Plenty of time.
Plenty. And which is for a show that is as produced as ours is crazy. It's ridiculous. People were working crazy to make this work, to make this the language that we were trying to develop, to get it to actually take off. The idea that you could score a weekly show to the extent that we were trying to do it. And the scoring, the music is so important to Snap Judgment storytelling, and the soundscaping, because we wanted, the idea was to get rid of all the boring stuff, and drop people into a story, into what's happening. And so get rid of the exposition. So, and that meant that the soundscaping was just as important as whatever anyone was saying, because those gave that sound gave you the cues, the emotional and story cues to understand what was happening. We were using upwards of 150 pieces of music per episode, and that's just the music. The things that you don't hear, the door slamming, the found sound, the breathing, all that stuff to bring that richness of sound was really something that we kind of, there wasn't really a precedent for it at that time on a weekly program. All I can say is hats off to the team if my partner and I, Mark, who started Snap, deserve an award for anything, is that we hired the best people possible. Our first hire was a guy by the name of Roman Mars, who went on and started 99% Invisible, which is a fantastic podcast. One of our first hires as an intern was Stephanie Fu, who's become now, she's a star producer for This American Life, which I don't appreciate. Every single person that seemed that was in that that class seems to have just been amazing, and they're going on to do wonderful things.
So let's focus a little bit now on what makes a good Snap story. Talk about that side of the process.
Sure. I mean, a Snap story is a story that moves someone, that draws you in, that bobs and weaves, that hits you with an ending that you don't see coming but makes complete sense when you get there. It's, I want those endings that just hit you in the throat. On our regular show, it's produced. We go into maybe someone's world, someone's home, someone's kitchen table, and we talk to them for hours. And then later on, use those interviews to construct maybe 7 hours of interview become a 7-minute story. But in the live setting, I need our storytellers to be able to go out there and rock it. And yeah, so they're setting up things that are stories that take us into worlds that it's one of those things that you, when you feel it, you're like, where did I just go? That at the end of it, I felt like I lived someone else's life. I feel like I've walked a mile in their shoes and looked through their eyes.
Talk a little bit about, it's a London expression, mind the gap. I've heard you talk about that previously.
That's right. You kind of got to understand the traditional sort of public media storytelling model, which is here's a little bit of exposition, a little story, a little exposition, a little story, and then we wrap it up with a public radio bow that tells you exactly what the story means. And what I'm suggesting to people is that we are all meaning factories. And by that, I mean that we are all looking for meaning in every single thing we do, hear, say. We're looking for these. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? The moment you give someone that bow, the mind stops. And I don't want your mind to stop. I want you to keep thinking about this story. I want the story to be ruminating in the back of your brain for a long time, bouncing around, putting yourself in that situation. And so you will never, ever, never, 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 ever, never, never, ever hear me say on Snap, well, the moral of that story is such and such and such. No, this story is yours. And I want to give you that story. And that's where the magic happens, right at the end. And so when I say mind the gap, that's what I'm talking about.
And what can our Kansas City audience expect with the live show that's coming up?
Magic. Snap Judgment is all about real life concentrated. And so you will laugh, you'll cry, you're going to laugh some more. Stories from people who really get at that whole thing. It's like, I'm going to take you on a ride. I'm going to let you see something about my life very, very intimately. And maybe it's going to resonate with your life as well. Jamie DeWolf is going to be here. This brother, he's been with us from almost the beginning, and it seems like his pieces, they become these instant classics. And if people haven't heard, he did a story for us early in the beginning of Snap called The God and the Man, and it's about growing up as the great-grandson of L. Ron Hubbard, who was the founder of Scientology, James Judd. Maybe one of the most hilarious rants I've ever heard in life. It's called The Book Report. I just can't say enough. And it's going to be backed up by this band called Bell's Atlas. And that really brings the soul, the funk. And we've been saying how important the soundscaping is to these stories. Bell's Atlas does a live scoring, a live performance in concert with these storytellers as they tell the story. And so they're responding in real time to the storyteller, the audience, to whatever might be going on, the environment, the tension. I just can't wait for people to see and experience what it's like to be really dropped into this story extravaganza universe.
I still want to ask you two quick questions. You have to answer what first comes to mind. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Favorite radio host, other than yourself?
Now, that's not fair. That's not fair, because as soon as I say it, everybody's going to get mad at me. Let me just say I have several favorite radio hosts. Let me just say this right now. We are in, I think, a golden age of radio. There's so much going on that has just been unleashed by this podcast revolution. Airtime has always been sort of this precious commodity that not everyone can get a hold of. Now people are just seizing the microphone for themselves, and it's allowing so many more voices to take control and put us in their heads. And I just, it's amazing.
If you didn't do Snap, what would you be doing, Glenn?
My background before Snap, like I said, was a nonprofit, but I also was in diplomacy as well, and in politics. These are all professions that, one way or another, story is central. Whatever I'd be doing, and I have no idea what it would be, I'd be telling somebody a story.
Thank you, Glenn.
Right on. Thank you so much for having me on, Bill.